You know, I was looking at these series of messages, and as we were going through particularly the Ten Commandments, it has struck me that I don't recall anyone in years that has ever gone through each commandment one at a time and discussed it. The most that I've ever recall is that they just maybe have been lumped together and referred to, but I can't recall anyone ever going through them one at a time. Maybe that's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, but whichever one it is, worth what we're doing anyway, as we're going through them one at a time and looking at them. The other thing that strikes me as we go through these and we talk about them is the reaction of people to them when we discuss them. You know, a lot of people quote the New Testament where Jesus summed up the commandments by saying love God and love man. And when they lump those all together, though, I don't know that they're getting the full understanding of what that means. He did not do away with these parts of the commandments. Each one that we looked at, which one would you throw out? You know, last week we looked at thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not murder. Would we throw out that commandment? Is that one of them we want to throw out? I don't know that, you know, there's any of them as we go through that we want to throw out. And so I think it's been a worthwhile adventure going through these commandments. And we're about to complete these Ten Commandments and look at them. But in the 1631 edition of the King James Version, it had a misprint. And some would call it minor. Just one little word that was accidentally missed by the typesetter. And he left out the word not in our text today. And so it read, thou shalt commit adultery. And so as a result, the edition is known as the Wicked Bible. But it seems to be the version, of course, that our world has chosen to claim. The seventh commandment has never been more dismissed than it is today. There has been no generation that I know of that has been so sex-crazed as ours. And this commandment stands as over the sanctity and the chastity of marriage and even the preserving of our society. You know, the violation of this command results in broken homes, in wicked lives, in disease, and in death. You know, the sexual revolution of the 60s has only snowballed since our senses are now dulled. We don't even recognize it so much. You know, it's an all-out assault on the seventh commandment here. It's scorned, it's ridiculed, it's belittled. It's considered outdated, archaic. It's so old-fashioned. And we hear so much about consenting adults. And that if we're not careful, we begin to consent and to accept it. The church no longer speaks out against it like we should. And we should all be taking a stand. We should be saying, you know, I stand alone upon the Word of God. You know, the Word alone is becoming more and more realistic, but still we should take our stand. You know, in recent events, this last week, of course, in the striking down of a piece of legislation that was endorsed by millions of people by one judge tells us, of course, the condition of our world as we stand here. Now, you know, who will stand if we don't? You know, will the TV shows, the movies that are kicked out by Hollywood, California, you know, will the porn websites just suddenly be shut down? No, they have proven that they cannot be policed sufficiently, even by the parents, you know. Parents aren't paying attention to what their kids are watching on their computers. You know, will advertisers suddenly begin to be responsible for their actions and will they continue to Or will they continue to capitalize on the fact that sex sells? They appeal to mankind's baser instincts. Hugh Hefner says, we're just another animal with instincts and desires that must be satisfied. And so to him, women are just pets. That's why he has the bunnies. You know, we're just animals. That's the way he views it. As kids, we're taught evolution in the classroom, and now we're acting like it. And if you tell a teenager that they're an animal for long enough, he'll eventually prove you're right. You know, there's that phrase that everybody's doing, and this is a common phrase used today to excuse our behavior. But it's no excuse. You know, we were shocked a decade ago when youth ministries guru Josh McDowell did an extensive survey of Bible-believing church teens that showed that more than half of them were sexually active even as they attended youth groups. And today that number has only increased. Among teen boys, there's something inconceivable has happened by polling standards. Now, you've heard this margin and error of plus and minus. You know that a certain answer within the range of a plus or a minus. Well, when asked anonymously if they looked at porn, teen boys answered yes at the rate of 98%. With an error of 2%, meaning that 100% is possible. It used to be that they would see this in a magazine or on TV, but the answer that it's on their cell phone and it's on the internet. So if you have 100 kids, somewhere between 0 and 4 that aren't looking at porn, the numbers between 0 and 4 that are not looking at porn, then you have 96% that are. And of course, about every parent claims that their children is in the 0 to 4% range in this category. Everybody's doing it, is the phrase that we hear so often, and it's pretty close to true, but that does not make it right. You know, today's surveys have had to go to the next level. I recently seen an anonymous survey of pastors with over 50% of them admitting that they look at porn. And that's the ones who will admit it. You don't have to be a very negative person to bow your head and say, yeah, you know, everybody's doing it, so just give in. Well, what we need is some to rise up and say, well, I'm not going to do it. And indeed, not everyone is living together before marriage. We've seen that. Not every kid is allowed an unsupervised TV or PC in their room. Many parents are wising up to this. Many are learning that they can easily monitor this as well as the cell phones. And many are realizing the importance of accountability, not only of their kids, but of one another. No, I'm accountable to my wife where I go and what I do and where I surf online and what I watch on TV. Is this because she doesn't trust me? No, it's because I don't trust myself. And neither should you trust yourself nor put yourself in a position of no accountability. You know, we're supposed to be accountable to God, but today we just blow Him off easily, and for some reason we fear what our family knows about us more than what God knows. You know, we are a brainwashed generation. The movie Titanic is a good example of this. That movie had people believing that you can fall in love in a matter of hours, have sex with them, and then regard them in your heart as the love of your life for the rest of your life. You know, that's silly. Now, I know that some claim love at first sight, but I also hope that there's a cure for that, and that's a second look, you know. The good news is from the same McDonald Youth Survey that showed a majority that were sexually active. The minority who were not, when asked why not, said it was because of a commitment that they had made to Jesus Christ. And that tells me that we must do more than this. Tell them, just say no. We need to lead them to meaningful relationships with the Lord and teach them about the commitment by making some commitments ourselves. And as adults, we need to make some changes in our homes and our habits, and then we can ask our kids to do that too. Just don't roll over on this one and say with the masses, just be safe. You know, if you can't be good, then be careful. There is no safer sex than that which is in God's plan. Now, God's version of safe sex is abstinence until marriage. 1 Peter 2:11 says, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul." A senator in Washington once said, "Today's teens are just hormone hurricanes, and you can't stop a hurricane." Well, I'm thankful for a power greater than a hurricane, and He's the creator of the hurricane. He's the one that kept my wife and myself pure for each other. He is that powerful a God. You know, some say sex is just a natural God-given appetite that we just need to fulfill. You know, and I'm here to remind you that it is an appetite from which you'll not die if it goes unfulfilled. No, stop eating and you'll die. Stop drinking and you'll die. Stop having sex and you won't die. You know, you may feel like you're going to, but you won't. I need to pause to tell you to relax and not get uptight when we talk about this subject of sex. We're here because of it, you know. Kids are hearing lies about it every day, and we need for them to hear the truth. You know, and there's only been one virgin birth, and you're not it. Hebrews 13:4 says, "Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled." You know, our society has discovered that there are certain penalties that are attached to sexual immorality. But instead of conforming to God's plan, they say, let's see if we can get around the consequences. You know, if there's a danger of getting disease, that's okay. Let's just use protection. And then they have the nerve to say, after all, they're 95% effective. Imagine 100 of you getting on an airplane and the flight attendant says, well, the bad news is we're going to crash. And the good news to you is that 5 of you are going to die. Would you regret that as good news? You know, if you get pregnant, that's okay. We can destroy the evidence. You know, there's no consequences. No problem here. God's plan for sex includes one man and one woman within the marriage relationship. Three words that we want to look at here this evening. The first is sexuality. When a man and a woman enter into a marriage contract, the seal of that covenant is their union physically. And to give away your virginity before marriage is far more serious than you ever thought possible. You know, and as you give it away, you give away the seal to your marriage contract. And then when you fall in love with someone and you marry them, you'll wish with all your heart to be able to give them the most wonderful gift that you could, which is your purity, but it can only be given one time. And just as the physical union within marriage seals the covenant of marriage, so a union outside of marriage with anyone else is what breaks that covenant. And this is the crux of the seventh commandment. You know, any blurring of the sexual distinction is wrong. You know, girls are wearing guys' clothes and guys are decorating themselves up like women. And when you drive around town, do you ask each other, you know, is that a male or is that a female? You know, is it a mister or a miss or a mistake? You know, the girl walks like Tarzan, the guy is walking like Jane, and they both smell like cheetah, you know. Like the preacher who stood before a couple at the wedding, he couldn't tell the bride from the groom. And he said, well, whatever you are, take whatever that is to become whatever you're going to be. You know? God made us different for a reason, and any blurring in that difference is wrong. And so the first word here is sexuality, when it tells us here. That marriage is honorable in all and the bed undefiled. The second word is immorality. And we looked earlier at Hebrews 13:4. Here's the rest of that verse. But warmongers and adulterers God will judge. You know, there are five dangers of premarital or extramarital sex. For this is the will of God that you should abstain from fornication. And so the five dangers then of premarital sex is, first is counterfeit love. The relationships on sex do not last. You start with the physical and then you find out you don't like each other. You know, you never grow together intellectually, emotionally, or spiritually. But if you start the physical after marriage, the other three parts just keep on growing. And then you have more than a sexual partner. You have a best friend who loves you. Real love is patient, pure, and unselfish. And so there is this danger of counterfeit love. There is the danger of emotional consequences. Studies show a direct correlation between premarital sex and personal emotional problems. There's guilt and anxiety, and there's a loss of self-respect among those who are involved, particularly young ladies who get involved in premarital sex. Guilt is the most destructive emotion that we can have. It leaves you shattered and uncertain and unproductive. And you lose that glow that always accompanies sexual purity. The third thing then is physical consequences. You know, the wages of sin is still death. And a drunkard is in danger of the cirrhosis of the liver. A smoker is in danger of cancer of the lungs. A glutton of cardiovascular disease. Sexual impurity is in danger of disease in which there are no cures. There are seven diseases besides AIDS which have no cure and all carry long-term consequences. And all are spread around through a crowd of people willing to have sex outside of the protection of marriage. When you go to bed with someone, you go to bed with every sexual partner that they've ever had. And so that is the danger and the physical consequences. There is a marital consequences. You know, I've counseled with young people who are not necessarily even young people, with adults who about their sexual activity outside of the relationship of marriage, and they say, "Well, that's all right. We're going to get married." No, it's not okay, and why? Because God said it's not okay. You know, who are you to rewrite God's rule? You know, you may not marry them, and the average teen falls in love 10 times before they ever get married. And even if you do marry them, you reduce your chances for a happy marriage, because you've chipped away at the foundation of trust. In the back of your mind, you will always know that the person you married is capable of immorality. And they're willing to have sex with you before marriage, and they're capable then of sinning within the confines of your marriage. A fifth danger here is spiritual consequences. You know, people ask me, "Well, don't you believe that God forgives?" Yes, I do. But forgiveness and consequences are two different animals. You know, David sinned with Bathsheba. They committed a murder. And in two incredible passages of Scripture, we see an awesome forgiveness that David requested and he received. But let me ask you, weren't there still consequences? You know, yes, God said, "David, you will live in a valley of tears the rest of your life. The sword will not depart from your house." And he buried a baby that died. And then one of his sons, of course, raped his daughter. And God said it was a direct result of his sin. Now the third word that we were, these that we're looking at here this evening, is we looked at sexuality and immorality. We want to look at purity. How to stay pure is to protect your mind. You know, the eye gate and the ear gate are so important. There are pathways. And 2 Peter 2:14 says, "Having eyes full of adultery, that cannot cease from sin. And so it's important to guard what we're seeing and what we're looking at. Yeah. Don't accommodate sin. You know, if you can't walk into a video store and stay pure, then don't walk in. If you can't flip around the channels without looking at something dirty, then you need to cut them off. You know, it is. I don't think it's any coincidence that one of the premium channels that you can get is called what? Sin-O-Max, isn't it? Wonder what that's all about. If you can't be alone together in a car, or you can't be alone somewhere, you need to make no provisions for the flesh. You need to stay away. And then you need to decide in advance. Make a predetermined decision to stay faithful. You know, the good news in all this is that each one of these things and each one of these commandments that we look at is a sin against God. A breaking of any one of them is a sin against God. That's not the good news, but the good news is that any one of them also provides for it a forgiveness from God. And that's really the good news that we need to deliver to a lot of people who are walking around with a lot of stuff that has been built up in their life, that they can get rid of that with the forgiveness of God. That life can be different. It can be new. It can be changed. There can be a freedom that they've never experienced before. It comes from the forgiveness of God. You can't change your past, but your future can be spotless.